Recently on our Tech for Business podcast, we have been talking all about the amazing AI tools and all the different ways you can use them. But today we're joined by Todd, our COO and CISO, and Nate, our Director of Cybersecurity, to discuss a little bit more practical adoption of AI and how to do that in a secure manner. So I want to start with Todd, because in a different conversation, you had said security should be kind of leading the charge or really be at the forefront of AI adoption in your business. So I wanted you to talk a little bit more about why you believe that, why you think the cybersecurity team should really be in it or leading the charge.
I guess it would somewhat depend on your organization, but I would say in most organizations, you probably do not have somebody who necessarily is high up in enterprise risk or potentially privacy. And so in most instances, I think that's largely going to fall on the security team. So at CIT, that would be true as well. We don't have enterprise risk. We're not quite large enough to do that. And so what that really means is the people that are going to have the deep knowledge of what should the privacy policy look like, what are the considerations that go into, where do we present risk to the organization, all those things need to be considered. AI in its current state is a lot of fun, and people are really starting to dive in and have fun with it. And I'm sure we'll get into one of my points I want to make a little bit later, so I won't mention it now. But as they're going through it, there really is a lot of just go out and see what I can do. Most organizations are developing some sort of use policy, but they tend to be pretty basic. They don't get into things such as what happens if somebody's outside of the organization, what can they use? Can they move information from between personal privacy, private accounts? It doesn't get into the fact of what does it look like as people start to generate code with it, or also known as vibe coding. So it doesn't get into those types of things. And where our organization is saying, I want to use all these tools, can I? Someone ultimately needs to say, yeah, that makes sense. No, it doesn't. And the security team typically is pretty well versed in what do privacy policies look like? Do they match what our existing policies look like, and so forth? And so for us, that is the stake in the ground, if you will, where we're saying this is where we're going to anchor the rest of the organization.
For sure.
My quick summary is, if your security team isn't, the rest of the org will, right?
That's a great way.
We'll put it this way. You know, here at CIT, we can easily see what AI agents users are attempting to go to and everything like that. And, you know, even as, we'll put it this way, you find a lot of shadow IT and it's pretty apparent, right? Is we can easily go in and say, we see users are trying to go out to ChatGPT or, you know, you or whatever it is. And even if CIT hadn't been trying to put this at the forefront and really kind of wrapping our arms around it early, the users would have already been there, right? The users are still curious and they still want it to streamline their own. And so whether or not you're with them or not, they're already there.
Definitely.
Expanding on that real briefly, I mean, as Nate mentioned it, if they're already doing it and you haven't put, from a security perspective, if you haven't put any thought, attention into what you're doing, how you're paying attention, that's probably not a great place to be, which is another really good reason to be the forefront of the, we're going to lead the charge.
So you're kind of moving on to one of my questions, which are sort of the first steps. And so you mentioned like policy, really getting that in place. What are some of those first steps as you are implementing AI into your company?
Great question. We start with policy, which I think makes the most sense. And an easy place to do is just kind of a general use policy. And it's, you know, make sure that as you're starting to play around with it, you're paying attention to information that is sensitive or not, those types of guidelines of what those typically look like. A possibility is if you can actually put together a governance committee to kind of say, we're going to have an AI committee, this is where I would really start in an ideal world. Is I want to put together an IT committee, and that IT committee, I'd come in with a policy that says deny all. And of course, that committee would immediately say, that's not a possibility. And I'd say, great, let's talk about what that actually looks like. I don't believe in denial either, but it's a very compelling reason. What are we doing? Why are we doing it? Are we just testing for no good reason? Or is there some methodical process that we're going through it? So I kind of like the challenging of, nope, you can't do anything. And then we can start from there. So a policy definitely makes a lot of sense. There's a lot to build off of that, but I'll let Nate jump in.
Yeah. Yeah, the deny all is an interesting approach because I feel like a lot of business leaders have that mentality, right? Just, we don't want it. We're not ready for it. And again, kind of the way I started off is your users are already going to be there, right? And so, for example, I was at a banking conference or, you know, kind of a symposium, and they were talking about AI. And one of the questions that they had asked participants was, well, how many have AI policies in place, or what are you doing with AI, right? The banks were trying to figure out what each other is doing, what's the ability to adopt this. And some of the banks said, we just flat out don't allow it. And others said, how do you not allow it? It's literally ingrained in the software that you're using these days, right? It's in Teams, it's in Word, it's in PowerPoint. So where do you draw the line of the core applications that you're using are already integrating it? So are you just flat out going to stop the capabilities of your core software? Or now do you have to start allowing some of it? And then that gets back to Todd's conversation of, so now what are we doing about it now that it's here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a podcast with Anne, our quality assurance analyst, and she mentioned sitting down with these stakeholders and how eye-opening it was to learn how people were using it and sort of, wow, maybe we should open it up more, or maybe we should really close it down. So having that open conversation is incredibly important. How do you decide who's in that room?
It's a great question. I think visibility is a good conversation. If you have nowhere to start, I would typically start with your business leaders, because ultimately where I'm going with my policy is I would like to attach it to where the corporation or the organization itself is going. And that should be, I'm using AI to solve business problems. And that group is typically going to be a little bit more strategic and actually have a vision for it, instead of I'm just going out and dumping a bunch of information into AI, if you will. And I know that's a gross analogy, but it will have a little bit more insights. Part two of that answer is because more often than not, when people start their pilot programs, they almost always start with their leadership teams and they say, okay, I want you guys to get your arms around it, and you start to get a feel for what this looks like and feels like. So that's typically where I start. But if you have the ability to start seeing what's happening, Nate kind of referenced it when he talks about, do you have the ability to look at shadow IT or AI? And that answer is, and this is, again, I'm probably getting ahead of myself, but you'll start to find out where your early adopters are. And those would be another great resource to tap into as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Here at CIT, we're able to also see the capacity that the users are using, some of them. And so you can quickly identify who your AI champions are, right? Who is the most invested into it? Those would be great resources to bring onto your team and say, what are you doing to actually solve the problems, right? You know, and how do we guide it in order to find the solutions that we're looking for, right? This is going to be a little bit of a tangent, but AI does hallucinate. That's probably well established at this point. But with various prompting, you can kind of guide it to the solution. So it's not a full-on replacement of individuals, but using the knowledge of your employees to help speed up the process. Those are the people that you want to bring onto your team to say, how can we efficiently solve the problems using the tool?
Yeah. I mean, the security team, this isn't their first time onboarding any type of tool, but AI is so different in how it interacts with your business data and the privacy. So what are some common concerns or mistakes or oversights you foresee or want to kind of bring to light for people as they start this journey?
Probably the biggest thing is just who has access to the data, right? Is the way that these AI tools work is they have access to data, they scan data, they index the data, and they pull it all together and try and make sense of it, right? And so when you are taking a look at these tools, it's going to be, there's data that goes in, it uses that data to then train the models to become a little bit better. And then it gives you an output of, you know, maybe what you're looking for. So there are, if you're using one of the, let's say it's a free solution, right? Mm-hmm. You're taking data and you're giving it to them to then get some type of output. In the meantime, again, you're giving them the data to do better training on your data. So the key concern there is, do I have, you know, intellectual property, personally identifiable information, healthcare info, right? Is some type of sensitive info that should not be indexed or trained or viewable by someone else, because that data may at some point get spit out to someone else as well. That's where when you pay for some of the tools, you know, let's say it's just, I'll pick on Microsoft Copilot right now, is you buy Microsoft Copilot for the organization, your organization's data is kind of contained into a shell. It does not get used to train other models that maybe another organization could pull from. So access to that data is going to be the most critical component to the adoption of AI. And so one of the first things that we see organizations do when they're looking to either implement Microsoft Copilot or anything else is do some type of data discovery and access control review. So what that may look like is go into your Office 365 SharePoint, literally in the name is called SharePoint, right? It's meant to be open and accessible. And so when you are uploading maybe your corporate data to SharePoint, maybe everyone has access to that. Is your board members uploading meeting minutes, corporate, you know, ledger, anything like that? Because Ariel, I'll pick on you. What if we don't want our marketing team to see all the payroll data, right? Well, that just happens to be where HR uploads their data as well. What if you came into Copilot and said, please pull up all the latest payroll info about the marketing team? And it came back and said, here's what your manager and all your peers make, right? Probably not great. So that access control is usually the first step to early adoption before you kind of build it out to the rest of the organization.
To kind of answer some of that question, I'll try not to repeat anything Nate said. I may inadvertently, but I'm going to try not to. One of the things that I did is I'd mentioned that implicit deny by default. And while I think that's a great challenging strategy, I don't actually think it's a great implementation strategy, because what ends up inevitably happening is most organizations have the capacity to block AI to some degree, whether it's on a firewall or some other type of security control. What you don't really want to happen is you don't want that person to go, well, I'm playing with it one way or the other, and so I'm just going to flip over to my personal computer, log into my SaaS tool set, and then throw it into ChatGPT. So you definitely don't want that. That ultimately ends up being one of the larger insider risks. I actually have an analogy of, I was working with an organization and one of the board members didn't really understand what had come out from the board meeting as prep, and he went into ChatGPT and threw all the information in there, and we had to sit down and say, please don't do that. That this is information that's private to this organization. You don't want to do it. And we got into the whys. Oddly enough, prior to that, we had just gotten done talking about the AI policy where we started with the implicit deny, which he didn't like, which is probably not a surprise. But those are the big kind of risks that you put out there. One of the other major ones that I typically see as an aha or trying to make sure we don't get too terribly far into is what ends up happening a lot of times is people do want to make sure that they're getting additional inputs, and it's the validation of where the source information come from. So you can prompt AI to say, please list your resources. And Google does this as you're typing in comments into it. Now you'll start to see the output of it, and it'll have references throughout it. What typically happens is people are typically very satisfied with that result. Like, oh, look, there's something there. It must be legit. And they just move on. This is the hallucination stuff we want to avoid, is you should go back and review the output, even though it's referenced it. I forget the statistic I saw one, but it was an alarmingly high number of the outputs while referenced aren't actually valid references. Again, AI really wants to give you an answer. And sometimes it will say, hey, I found something that was pretty darn close to what you were looking for, and so I referenced it. But if you go back and look at it, it may not be accurate. So those would be my major, these things would be stuff I would typically look out for. But again, I think it's, well, I have one more that I'll throw in here. The shadow AI one, I think, is a really, really big deal. I think organizations really need to be transparent about what our expectations are. And it's going back to what I said, if you lock things down tight enough, people will just find a way around it. And we don't want that. We want the transparency of what are you doing? How can I help you be successful? How do we still make sure that we've got, we'll probably get into guide rails at some point, but how do we have the appropriate guide rails in place to make sure that we aren't going outside of the boundaries, if you will. So being transparent and helping people through that, I think is also a huge thing.
Just an example of one of the hallucinations that I came across recently, just for some context, was I was trying to work on a web app firewall or a WAF, and we were trying to figure out why something was getting blocked. And someone asked AI, you know, what should I go look at within the WAF? And it said, by default, this WAF denies everything by default, and you need to allow certain things through. Well, I've deployed this WAF solution before, and you have to configure every module to be blocked. So by default, it's wide open until you actually block it. So, but it was confidently wrong saying, no, it blocks by default. And total hallucination. It was dead set saying, I'm confident about that.
Yeah. So interesting.
Probably read some marketing articles saying we block everything by default.
Probably.
Marketers.
We're probably pulled information from Reddit.
Yeah.
I have noticed, this is a tangent myself, but I have noticed sometimes if I switch the way that I ask the prompt, it will give me two totally separate outcomes because of the way that it's reading your prompt and anticipating what you're asking rather than actually finding the right answer. So again, that human element, the editor, is incredibly important now more than ever. So AI is not getting rid of the humans. It is just changing our interaction with. Yeah.
Because this topic is also about secure adoption, just because you mentioned editors, code. And so Todd had mentioned code as well, is a lot of people will ask, let's say ChatGPT, Claude, whatever it is, write me a PowerShell script to do something, right? Mm-hmm. Or create me an application, kind of what Todd was mentioning about Jive AI is what it's called again?
Vibe coding.
Just go create me a full-on Python Flask app, and I'm just going to run it, right, in my environment or something. Did you do secure code review on it? Did you have the knowledge to know whether or not something malicious was injected into that PowerShell script? So human editor, really, really important, especially with code.
Definitely. We've talked about a lot of different things, and a few things that keep coming up are this shadow IT, the shadow of AI, which is a whole podcast on its own, but if we want to kind of touch on what that is, and then also setting up guardrails and how we do that in this practical adoption. So maybe we'll start with the shadow AI and just touch on that. What does that mean? What are the risks? Because that will definitely be a separate podcast, but maybe Nate, you can start there.
Yeah, I kind of mentioned it at the start, is if you don't have the technology to auto-discover where people are going, you could ask them, right? And part of this is going to be built off of trust, right? Could you tell me, how are you using AI today, if at all, right? And someone may be hesitant to reach out to you if they know it's maybe against corporate policy, which is where the trust comes in. But just say, you know, I'm trying to build a committee of where the bank or hospital or whoever may be trying to adopt this. I would like your feedback, if at all possible, right? And people may open up to you and start sharing this info. And so once you start identifying, well, yeah, okay, maybe I do use ChatGPT on the side a little bit, or maybe I did go to Claude and Anthropic and do it a little bit. Now you can start diving a little bit deeper into how are you retrieving info? Are you processing info, doing analytical comparisons? What is it that you're trying to accomplish here? Now, if you have the technology, so this is where we'll talk about like cloud access security brokers, CASBs, that is a CASB, sorry, or a SASE or SSEs, which are now like security service edge. There's these cloud technologies that are inspecting the traffic kind of going in and out of your environment to these cloud applications, and you can see how much bandwidth is being uploaded, how much is being downloaded. Sometimes you can even see the prompts that are being injected into the AI tools, or just how many transactions and, you know, duration are people interacting with these AI tools. And so that's where the shadow IT comes in, and the visibility comes in, is we already know you're there, right? Mm-hmm. Just work with us to figure out how, because to cut off AI, or sorry, the shadow IT, you want to meet them where they're at, or at mm-hmm. least be able to then guide them to an alternative solution that maybe is a little more in line with the security, the privacy, the regulatory standards before you.
Yeah. Again, I think that's all a whole other podcast on its own, because it's such a big, broad topic. But getting back to this practical application, I don't know, Todd, if you'd be willing to talk a little bit more about setting up guardrails, and then even a little bit of, as a business, how do you keep that transparency to your customers? We talked about AI policy and employees, but how do you now externally make sure that you're being transparent?
Yeah, it's a really good question. As this is expanding, and it's going, I'm sure everybody knows at this point, but it's expanding at a remarkable rate, and people are really getting excited about it. Again, kind of gets into the shadow AI field in general, as people are trying to find ways to make it successful for them. And so you do need to set some sorts of guide rails, some basic things. One of them is obviously the policy we talked about first, but then there are some additional stuff as you start to get a little bit further into it. Some of these tools are still in development, but one of the things that I'd mentioned to Nate months ago is one of the things I'm concerned about is what we're referring to as non-human identities. And what that means is, as we start to get into agentic AI, you're starting to have AI do specific things, and you need to be able to monitor it. So an example of a great guide rail for that is you have a specific entity for that particular tool set. So if it's doing one thing in particular, you've given it permissions, but only those permissions. So it can't talk to other applications. It can't potentially send information outside the organization. So you create that identity and you make it specific to that one agent. You want to make sure that you're not sending it beyond that. I know that one's a little bit more broad, but there are a bunch of other things too. Is, again, you can start looking into, as I'm pulling in my data, what do you do with it? And this will get into other things like, is it a SaaS AI tool set, or is it internal? There are a lot of tools that you can bring into your own organization. And once those are inside, you have a lot better controls over what you do with it. But if you're looking at tools outside of your organization, the privacy stuff is what I'm really looking at. It's still relatively early in the process where we're at. If you look at the U.S., there's several states that are working on specific privacy policy. California, Chicago, well, Chicago's not a state, sorry. California, New York, a variety of things like that. They're starting to build those out. And while that's interesting, there's also been some rumblings about on the federal level, those may be banned. However, on other parts of the world, such as the EU, they actually do have strong AI policies of what they're looking for. And so what they're saying is, if you're going to have certain data that's completely exposed, it has to be anonymized, or you potentially have to have the geo restrictions that this data can only live here. You have the right to be forgotten, all those types of things. So those would be other guide rails that you'd want to be looking at and considering as you start to build these things out. What am I doing with the data? How do I want to share it? Does it go outside the organization? Does it get shared with a third party? You still have to dig through all these kinds of things. We'll probably expand on this too as you start to look at vendors, but I'll pause there and let Nate jump in as well.
Yeah, right now, everyone is still, not everyone, there's still a lot of developing regulatory, you know, oversight and frameworks. So Todd had mentioned the EU, so it's the EU AI Act. And then here in the United States, again, we have the privacy ones, which, you know, California with like the CCPA has been around for quite some time. But there's also like NIST has their AI risk management framework. So that's been developing as well. So everyone's trying to still wrap their head around it, build the structure and frameworks to control it a little bit. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel is really what we're trying to say, right? Is collectively the world is figuring it out, but to bring it into your organization, everyone's still a little bit weary, especially if you're in a regulated space, is what are the auditors or the assessors going to say about some of the stuff? So align yourself as best as possible to one of these frameworks.
Definitely. I want to make sure that we're covering everything that you feel is important to cover, but I think we need to discuss this idea of working with vendors who use AI. So if I, as a company, don't want to use it, I've decided I'm not using it, but I have an MSP or I'm working with a vendor that is using AI, what does that relationship look like? What is that conversation that really needs to happen?
Yeah, great question. I mean, from my perspective, I think that that does have to be a conversation. You have to start pretty early. I couldn't tell you what the frequency of your partners actually using it, but as Nate mentioned, it's almost an easy assumption that almost everybody you're working with is using AI in some shape, manner, or form. You can see it's getting implemented in a bunch of tools. Over the last 2 years, it's been this breakneck speed of people trying to deliver those types of tool sets. But it could be something as simple as a tool that's coming in and doing note-taking for you. There is AI in the background of disseminating that information, building action items, et cetera. And if you ever happen to be in a meeting, as an example, what that looks like, you'll see the note that says, hey, such and such is on. It's a note taker that's jumped in. If you don't want us to record it, let us know and we'll kick it out. Those things kind of happen. And so once those kinds of things come to light, you probably need to have a deep conversation of saying, okay, we need to do a vendor due diligence on what AI looks like. And then you can start to build out a questionnaire of what they are. Anyway, a lot of those things, when I would look at those questionnaires, they would heavily depend on the things that are already existing, as Nate mentioned, whether it's the NIST framework, if it's ISO, if it's the EU Act, all of those types of things would help you build what that list is. There are people out there that can help you with the list too, if you have no idea where to start. But those are the things that I would start with. And then, of course, there would be some legal conversations that if you don't have a lawyer that's starting to consider these things, I'd highly recommend that as well.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the big things to take a look at is the privacy, right? Is how are you using my data? Well, if at all, right? Is the, maybe it's just conversational, you know, we're just trying to do a prospecting call with a customer or something along those lines. But maybe you're sharing intellectual property and that intellectual property is being sucked up into some type of system. So while you're engaging in more sensitive topics, be aware, right? Maybe turn off the note takers, something where you are confident that it's not going to leak anywhere. One of the other ones is going to be, what are the sub processors that you're using? So this comes up quite frequently in regulatory spaces, is you are taking my data, and then where does that vendor then take their data, right? And how are they processing it? So oftentimes you can go take a look at all those vendor agreements, whether it's, you know, the MSAs, about how is that data being processed downstream as well. And the vendors will typically list who their subprocessors are. And so you can kind of follow the chain of what are all the entities that may or may not touch that data. And maybe there's one that you're concerned about. Oftentimes, again, if you're working with reputable organizations, they will have their own strong due diligence as well. And again, every once in a while, you'll get an email saying, we've added a new subprocessor to our list, notifying you before they happen.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. Is there anything that we didn't cover? Because this was a very broad overview, and I think we could dive deep into any of these topics, but I want to make sure that we get the basics covered that you both feel when you're starting this journey, what would you start with? So is there anything we didn't cover?
Absolutely.
That you wanted in the basics?
The one thing that I would throw in there, yes, the answer is there's so much that we didn't cover. Yes. The one thing that I would throw on there is we talked about policy and whatnot, kind of alluded to it, but I just want to hammer the point home is, I would use risk as part of my decision-making. What risk does this present to us? I know Nate mentioned intellectual property, but I can't emphasize enough how much PII and PHI are impactful in those same categories. It's just really prevalent. It needs to be considered as you're going through this. And so I think you need to have some form of risk on your decision-making of what are we doing? How are we doing it? What is the risk instilled to us as well as our customer base as we're going through this?
Yeah. I think for me, the biggest thing is just meet users where they're at and start having those conversations. I've seen many organizations at this point just starting to pull back when all the users are leaning forward. So there's already a tension happening within between business leaders and their end users. And so if you pull back, it's only going to slow your control or adoption over some of this. You have to at least build the trust and meet them and say, help me just figure out where things are happening, or, you know, how we're using that data and tool set so we can do something about it together.
Definitely. Right. I think we're going to come back to this topic going forward because there was so much talked about today. But thank you so much, Nate and Todd, for getting us at least started on this journey.
Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed this topic, please let us know. Like, subscribe, or reach out to us at info@cit-net.com or head out to our website, cit-net.com/podcast. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode.